Okay, we are ready.
Okay. The day is Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. It is 6:35 p.m. I call to order the Board of Ethics regular meeting. Let's start with some introductions, staff introductions, and then we could go around and introduce ourselves really quickly, and especially for our new member. So staff introductions,
please. So my name is, My name is Doris Arm. I'm the city clerk for the city of Tacoma, and I am your staff person for this committee.
And I'm Martha Lance. I'm from the city attorney's office, and I'm the attorney advisor for your committee.
Okay, let's go and do a member roll call. My name is Joe Atkinson. I'm the chair of the Ethics Board.
Katie Baird. I'm a member. This is actually my second meeting. Yeah, and I teach at UW Tacoma.
Wonderful. James McCarty. You can call me Jimmy. And I'm this is my first meeting on the board, and I teach at Seattle University.
Oh. And I'm Linda Batway, and I've been on the board for about a year, I guess, and I'm retired. I was a hospital social work department director and worked in medical ethics committee so on.
Yep, and then my background is state legislature, King County Council, doing policy work and working for elected officials and a few other things, but now I'm currently a full-time real estate broker. And then I am a small business owner here in Tacoma, too. And then Ohad Lowy, unfortunately, we're having technical difficulties, yes. So he's hopefully going to join us a little bit later via phone. So we're going to start. We don't have any cases to go over right now, and we have a simple agenda, so we're just going to start with our election of officers. What's the procedure?
The procedure says not much. The procedure says the board shall annually elect a chairperson and a vice chairperson to take office January 1 of the following year or soon thereafter as practicable. So Joe is currently the chair, and who's the vice chair?
It was Bill.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the vice chair position is open, and the actually, you could take nominations for either. So
yep. So both positions are open. So of course, Bill was our vice chair. And I'm happy to continue being chair unless somebody else wants to jump in and do it. But I think since I've been here the longest, maybe I'm best to run the meetings. We definitely need to elect a chair and elect a vice chair. So we're going to do them both at the same time.
No, I think you should do them separately. Yeah. So I think you should open the floor for nominations for chair, and if you want to nominate yourself, you can.
Yep. I nominate Joe for chair.
I'll second it.
Okay. Any discussion?
All of run, Joe, run.
I know.
Want to give a little speech?
I'm waiting for the check to cash. Still.
are there any other nominations?
Pay. Yeah, you want to ask for any?
Are there any other nominations for chair? Okay, so there is one nomination. Nominations for chair are closed. All in favor of electing myself, Joe Atkinson, as chair, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Okay, so do we have any nominations for vice chair? I nominate Linda for vice chair.
I'm a little nervous about it in that I may have a big change happening in my life, so I'm just unsure whether I'll be able to serve the whole year or not at this point. So.
Okay.
The vice chair is just here in case you are absent. Is that it?
Correct.
Yeah. And then I'm only here for another year, roughly. So the vice chair may be taking on the role of chair in the future. So.
Well, but it's not an automatic.
Yeah, it's not.
Right.
It's not.
The vice chair acts as chair in the absence of the chair or in the event of a vacancy in that position. So.
Yep.
I'd be happy to do it. If you'd feel more comfortable with it.
I'll nominate you, Katie.
Okay.
Okay.
Since we have a long personal relationship.
Yeah. Really long. Yes.
Okay. Do we have any other nominations for vice chair?
You need a second for the nomination.
Yep, we got a second.
Okay,
yep.
Sorry.
Are there any other nominations? Is there any discussion? Is there going to be a big speech?
You call for one.
Okay, all in favor of electing Katie Baer as vice chair, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? And that is unanimous. Now, do we have any other business to discuss?
I don't have any other business other than I'm working really hard. So we're pretty short-staffed in the clerk's office. We are working really hard on updating the website. We have a lot of movement in terms of staff members right now, so it may be just a little bit longer. But working on getting everything caught up and out on the website.
Well, I'll just keep bringing up that I would really like us to spend some time looking at best practices, you know, in terms of other communities, what's happening, how their ethics boards function.
Didn't you also last time ask to have some of past cases on a website? Mm-hmm. Isn't it kind of a little bit hit and miss as to what's up there?
Yeah, and I was going to work with Martha because I'm not sure if we could put the whole report out there with that. We just need to take a look at that.
I see. What's public information?
Yeah.
Mostly I'm concerned about, it seems like we act in a fairly small vacuum and haven't done exploration of what other ethics boards in other cities have done and are doing. And last time I brought up about there was a Yale program several years ago that created a whole special study and recommendations, and I think it merits some attention on our part to see if we can make an improved and more meaningful contribution in the city. So.
And I still have a lot of that printed out, and I have access to all that, the information too that you connected me with. It would be nice if maybe prior to our next regular meeting, if we maybe you and I talked and we got something together that would be good for us to read and discuss and see if there is any information that we could get from other entities.
If you'll show up, Joe, I'll go.
If you wanted to officially form a subcommittee, you could do that. Joe?
Yep.
If you guys wanted to form, I mean, I know you talked about it in the past, and I think you left it as sort of informal, but if you wanted to officially task a subcommittee with researching something that the group wants and reporting back to the group, you know, that's appropriate.
And what would, go ahead, Katie.
I guess I was just going to ask Martha, I bet you have quite a bit of knowledge about these types of committees. Are there some, like, key ways of doing things differently that we might consider if we were...
Well, I guess Doris and I can tell you what happened in the past is a group, I don't know, it was probably 8 or 9 years ago now, tasked themselves with this very same sort of concept of you know, sort of scanning the landscape and reviewing. Mm-hmm. And that particular group came back with Seattle's Code of Ethics, which I think we've talked about before, that it's very different. They have jurisdiction over elections. They have the specific authority to issue penalties and fines. It's just it's a very different setup. And that group came back and said, we want to do this. And
you mean like Seattle?
Yeah, and you know, so that that wasn't possible. But what that group did end up doing was combing through the ethics code that we had at the time and suggesting some clarifications, some changes, some updates, and we ended up with basically the version that we have now, which was revised in 2011. Yeah. So that was a project. You know, the result of that was quite a bit of work. Kind of the question of, you know, what was broken came up, and a lot of discussion around some of the things that you know, you've sort of struggled with is, should there be more teeth in this? You know, what's the authority? What's the ability? What's the, you know, what's the scope of the task at hand? And, you know, various ideas were kicked around. Came up with this new draft of the code. The process then was to run it through the council committee. It was the
government performance.
It was government performance committee, and propose a set of amendments. That all got vetted, and then eventually, you know, what was hashed out was taken to the council, which resulted in what we have now. And I can tell you that the changes were really not wholesale. There was quite a bit of clarification surrounding the complaint process. So if you think it's not exactly clear right now, it was even worse. But you know, there had been some talk about, like I said, trying to maybe take an approach more like Seattle, and that really didn't get any support either from staff because of the limitations that we have, and, you know, just that we don't handle elections and that sort of thing. But, you know, when it was run through the council, there was quite a bit of discussion, not from a perspective of, you know, you're making it harder for us to, you know, not be transparent, but really concerned with practicality, burden on staff, you know, if we set up all this additional process and all of these additional, you know, requirements, who's going to keep track of that? There was quite a bit of discussion around financial reporting, conflict of interest reporting. You know, if you run for public office, you have to file with the state a form that has all of your, you know, financial information on it. And there was quite a rousing discussion about whether to require that here. The electeds already do it, and they file with the state. But Seattle has that level of reporting go all the way down through managerial chains, all the way down to, you know, department directors and the like. So there's a, I mean, just as an example that I remember really vividly, there was quite a bit of discussion around that. It got very, very heated. Mm-hmm. And ultimately the determination was, is even if, you know, there was sort of a philosophical thought that that would be a good idea, the burden on administration and on staff to try to figure out how to enforce it and, you know, what level did it go to and, you know, what did it mean? And really, to what good end? Kind of the, if it's what's broken kind of question. That took like, the whole thing took like 6-8 months to get through. So I'm not saying don't do it, but I am just sort of by way of illustration saying that, you know, when a prior group of people in your same seats got together and, you know, went over it. And I do think there were some improvements, but some of their motivation was, you know, like I said, both from ideas from other jurisdictions, but they had gone through a particular situation where we had a pretty complex complaint with a big investigation, and just the procedures were confusing enough that that was the original impetus, is to try to sharpen up those procedures, which is what for the investigation and the hearing and the you know, the decision making by this group. So that's what got us to the process that we have now. So, you know, like I said, all of that is just to offer you the fact that it's happened before, and if you want to, you know, volunteer your time to take another look at it and look for things that you think could be improvements, that's certainly within your jurisdiction and your authority.
Well, I know that, you know, the last year, and I don't remember the details by any means, but there was a whole big thing with Lakewood and the closed nature of the deliberations.
Oh, yeah. I think that was
huge
Pierce
change.
County, actually.
It,
yeah.
Yes, it was Pierce County.
Yeah.
Sorry. And about not so much the scope of content, but the public access to information, and that was something that I'm concerned about too.
Well, the county cleaned it up, and actually, I think they rewrote it
based on Tacoma's.
Yeah, based on some of our process. So, the prior decisions are all public record. We can certainly post all the decisions.
I think around the decisions, I thought it would be helpful for our group to have a sense of past decisions, past issues, to have an idea of what kinds of things have come to the committee, because we've only had a couple things in the last year.
And to be honest, there really haven't been that many.
In fact, I was just sort of taking a look at them. It looks like maybe about 2 a year, only one in 2017. So,
and a fair number of them were administratively dismissed because there was just...
Well, even the first year I came on, there was a few cases that first year, and they also had them online back then because they had a different city website. And I went through and I read through, you know, a couple dozen cases in the past, or at least a dozen, and that was really helpful to me. So I think it would be good
if staff could
get them online in a
simple way, just get us for us to look at. It would be helpful.
Sure, I could send them to you guys
tomorrow.
Okay. And then maybe we could decide whether that wanted to be something online or not.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think those should be public records, and they should be available to the public too, without them having to come up and ask. And mm-hmm. you might get people thinking about things, and you know, we don't want to encourage more complaints, of course, but you know, we want to be available if people
mm-hmm.
have legitimate issues they want to bring forward, and that might
yeah.
help people understand that, well, here's other cases that happen, here's decisions
mm-hmm.
that were made, and you know, my case may be legitimate or may not based
mm-hmm.
on what they read online. It might be helpful to the public. So that would be my preference. I don't know, what time frame do you think that could happen in?
Well, maybe if we can at least start and look at them.
Okay.
Yeah.
That might be a good
yeah.
thing.
Okay.
So I can sit down tomorrow, because I have them write in an email, I can send
mm-hmm.
them,
thank
you know,
you.
Pull them over and send them all to you tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That'd be
yeah.
great.
The difficulty in getting them up on the city's website is that's not, we don't run that.
Mm-hmm.
You have
yeah.
to, like,
yeah,
you have to compete for.
Yeah.
For space and
for
staff time.
For staff
posted
mm-hmm.
and
getting a website
getting
sort of built the way that they want it built in a particular, because
mm-hmm.
They want everything
mm-hmm.
to look the same,
mm-hmm.
you know, with all the committees, boards, and commissions. So it takes an IT person to,
yeah.
and communications to go out there and set it up.
Is there anyone that I could email that I could say, you know, hey, are you... Are you able to, I mean, I'm not sure what workload that would create, you know, on you and on them, but to see if this is on the agenda and if, you know, they have a time frame.
Let me give it one more try. Before you email anybody, let me give it one more try.
Okay.
And we'll see what we can do.
It'd be nice to have an idea of, you know, when they possibly might do it. They have, of course, a lot of things on their plate, but. And then
who doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And going back, I know when I was at the legislature, they change their ethics laws to make it so staff had to sign those same public disclosure forms.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I was too happy about it when I was a staff member, but you know, that's one thing, and there's a lot of things that we could consider doing to expand our code of ethics
right.
to include things that other entities do now.
Right.
You know, I want to
yeah.
look into that myself, but I'm not really pushing for it now. I think what our code does is pretty clear, and it's good.
It might be helpful to sort of just do a real high level walkthrough for you, James. I don't know if you took a look at it or.
I haven't looked at it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I think this was, you know, something that Linda found interesting as well. When we talk about the code of ethics, the kinds of ethics worlds that I suspect that the two of you, you know, are familiar with are very different. I mean, the primary direction of not just ours, but, you know, most public employee codes of ethics are getting at financial conflicts of interest and, you know, improper use of resources and, improper use of position, improper use of city resources, that type of thing. So it's a pretty proscriptive world. And, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, you know, there's a problem here, that should be unethical. But really, it might, you know, have been ill-advised or look funny, but the analysis that is really, you know, available to this group and in going through it is prescriptive. It's you know, was there a violation of
mm-hmm.
these very specific types of conduct? And if yes, then, you know, you move forward in the process. And if no, what your process allows is to administratively dismiss that, you know, that if the facts as presented in the complaint, even if you presume they're true, you know, without doing any additional investigation or of any kind, because you take them at face value, if those facts don't reach the level of a violation, then the group can dismiss it without taking any testimony, without, you know, doing anything further, really, without even having a meeting. You just do it. You can even do that by email, according to your procedures. So this particular group, I don't think you've had anything that has reached the level where you couldn't put the facts together. Either the facts didn't meet the standard to begin with, or if you say, well, we need to know more, we haven't done one with this group where we've had to obtain evidence other than, you know, finding documents that are in the public record or taking and analyzing the materials that were presented in support of the complaint. Some years ago, we had a couple where testimony was taken. There was a financial conflict of interest issue involving a council member, gosh, about 10 years ago, that ultimately did not find a violation, but was took quite a bit of unwinding. And that case, the board actually hired an investigator. We can use, if you need to have something investigated, a city investigator can do it. But for some reason, somebody wasn't available, so somebody got hired at relatively large expense, as it turned out. And there was just, you know, ultimately nothing. There was nothing found, but because of all of the process, facts were found. I mean, you know, the investigation revealed things that then needed to be documented, and the board reached a conclusion that, you know, all of this evidence, body of evidence that we've determined from this investigation doesn't lead us to a violation. And then there was a couple of others where some live testimony was taken. There was a question. The deposition.
Subpoena.
Oh, yeah. And also the board has the authority to take in evidence by written questions. So in a couple of situations where the board wanted to know from the subject of the complaint, you know, did this happen, or tell us about this, or show us this, that's been done by sending written questions that they answer under oath, which actually works pretty well. And then in those cases, the board at the time was satisfied with the facts that were gathered that, you know, got you to a position where you could then enter an order based on the facts and hadn't reached the situation where it was felt necessary to, like, bring the person in and have them testify, but they could.
We also had a situation where there was an alleged conflict with a person who had done work for the school district and then supported a school district contract.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to look through emails, and the school readily sent them to them to us without us having to do a public records request.
Well,
we didn't.
They weren't. The school district wasn't that compliant. But
well, they got it.
Eventually, they cuffed them up. Yes,
it took a little bit.
Yeah,
and then they sent us a lot of duplicate. But we're able to look into things pretty deeply to get information.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of the cases that we've been hearing recently have been more political issues and political decisions that don't fall under any violations that clearly, you know, implicate the code of ethics. So that's been one of the issues, and some of the things may have been ill-advised politically or whatever, but we aren't involved in elections. We aren't involved in looking at donations people get, unlike somewhat and in some form the Seattle Code of Ethics. Is. So if we were going to expand, it would be in that capacity, not to violate people, but to get the public more information.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, you know, if I had the time and had some directive, what I would look into. But that's a topic, you know, down the road, of course. But I'm sorry to interrupt you, Martha.
Oh, no.
You're kind of giving us a rundown of the code, too.
Sharing some past history to the extent that it would be helpful to you.
Yep. And then most of the violations or things that have been alleged have been pertaining to conflicts of interest and financial interests and those kind of things. So, I mean, what do you think are the most, let me backtrack a little bit. So there's a lot in the ethics code, just from my experience, that we haven't even looked into, really. We've mostly looked into just a couple of clauses in there. Martha, are you able to kind of give us a rundown of the ones that come up the most, possibly?
I mean, 1.46030 is the prohibited conduct. So when I was saying that it was prescriptive, that list is the limitation. A big chunk of it is financial conflicts of interest. There's beneficial interests and contracts are prohibited, so you can't both participate in your capacity as a city officer or employee in benefiting from a contract, direct or indirect financial interest, and also awarding it. So, you know, that's sort of the classic, can't sit on the council and, you know, award your brother-in-law's garbage truck business.
Oh, thank you.
The beneficial interest in contract selection. And in the financial conflict of interest, that's actually modeled.
Where are you now?
Oh, 1.46030. That's modeled pretty directly after the state's financial conflict of interest for government employees. And it has a safe harbor, if you will, that's called the remote interest. So our code defines basically exceptions to the prohibition of beneficial interest in contracts. And as long as you, you know, are within those safe harbors, and if you're an elected official, you fill a form out and then don't participate in the awarding of that contract, you're still okay. So, you know, when we have these financial conflict of interest allegations, that's sort of the analysis that needs to be walked through. There's another one about beneficial interest in contract selection. You can't influence the selection of a contractor if you have a financial interest in that. So not just awarding it, but, you know, sort of behind the scenes, well, I'm not going to vote on it, but you should, you know. We have a clause about private representing a private person at a city proceeding. So if somebody comes before, you know, this board, I don't know, maybe like I couldn't represent somebody before this board as their lawyer.
Right.
You know, it's just too many hats. So private employment, we do allow, I mean, city officers, elected, obviously they have a part-time job, so they are allowed to engage in other employment. But, and same with city employees, we can take other jobs, but the question is, does it, you know, impermissibly conflict with your duties? And it depends, you know, that's a fact issue. But if there was, that would be something that could be looked into. Same analysis, beneficial interest in legislation. You can't have a financial interest in any legislation coming before the council and participate in it. So, for example, if a council member a member of a planning commission, if they were tasked with a zoning change that would benefit, you know, cause something to be zoned commercially where previously you hadn't had that ability, and it was and they own property within that sphere, they wouldn't be allowed to participate in that, and it would be a violation if they did. And then under F, this continuing financial interest, that whole clause was added in the overhaul of the code that I was discussing earlier, and that came directly out of a case where the person did not have an interest in the contract selection per se, but they were both an elected official and working with a firm that was competing for some city work. It was something to do with Cheney Stadium. They weren't an employee of that firm, so it wasn't a direct, you know, they wouldn't directly financially benefit from that contract being awarded. But the nature of this person's profession was a service professional, and he had had numerous ongoing relationships with this particular firm. So this continuing financial interest is sort of was a gap, if you will, that the board members at the time thought was present, which was, you know, if you don't have a direct conflict, but yet still you've had a past relationship and it seems likely that you'll have a future relationship, that you would still have some potential benefit from this particular firm being awarded the city business. So that, you know, analysis came up in this new prohibition of continuing financial interest. And that was one of the things that went through quite a bit of analysis. And the council ultimately, including the poor council member who got caught up in it, ultimately said, yeah, you know, that does seem like a gap. That's a good addition. That would address something that could be a harm, and you know, let's add it. So, but since it was added, we've never used it again.
We've never had
it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of relates to conflicts of interest, and you know, conflicts of interest could be, you know, on nonprofits. They could be a lot of different things. But really, our code centers more around financial interests.
Mm-hmm.
If there is no financial interest, then it's very hard to violate somebody.
Yeah, but then the list that follows after that ends it up is, you know, pretty clear. Disclosure of confidential information is prohibited. So. You know, that would apply to you all, too. If you learn something that is, you know, personal or private that we wouldn't disclose as a public record, you can't disclose it either. Improper use of city position, I talked about that a little bit before. Like, you can't, you know, ask Doris to do your dry cleaning. Would you pick up your dry cleaning? Yeah.
She could offer.
Yeah. I'll get it for you. Yeah.
I'm out there anyway, sure.
Yeah. Same with city personnel. Like, you can't, you know, ask your assistant to, you know, do your personal bidding. Anything that really gives an advantage to a city officer or employee that isn't available to the general public would, you know, sort of generally fall into that class of prohibitions. And then the other one is about gifts, and we do get some business in that regard occasionally. There was actually one that involved former Mayor Strickland that, you know, there was an allegation that, and it's, you know, I was in the newspaper, it was all public record, that she had improperly accepted a gift, which was some frequent flyer miles to take a trip on city business. And the person who had gifted them, you know, maybe didn't have any ill intent, but it was a thing of value, and the prohibition is pretty clear that no city officer or employee can receive or agree to receive compensation, gift, favor, reward, gratuity for a matter connected with or related to their services with the city of Tacoma. So that got fixed, actually. There was some overhaul in this code, too. Originally, the gift prohibition was said, but if it's under $50, all bets are off. And unlike some jurisdictions, the prior overhaul of the code took that $50 out. So now it doesn't say anything, but it says the exception is not for something that's under $50, but something at whatever value that cannot be reasonably presumed to influence one way or another. So, you know, it's probably
expands.
Yeah. I mean, it could be something that the $50 limit not being in there, that's a little different than some codes. And the thinking at the time was, well, you know, you could have something that doesn't have particular nominal value, but it does have a type of value that clearly the intent to give it was to extract or hope for some, you know, treatment in return. So that got cleaned up. And then the last thing that was added is this section L, commissions of acts of moral turpitude. Remember they added that
timely.
It wasn't there before, but the outcome of that was if a city officer or employee is, you know, convicted of a crime of moral turpitude, which is one of those things that lawyers like to say that, you know, nobody knows precisely what it means. But, you know, generally, like a heinous crime. Just adding into that the notion that being convicted of a crime in that regard is automatically a violation of the Code of Ethics. You don't have to have a hearing. You don't have to have an allegation. You're just done.
Mm-hmm. So, but it's convicted in the court. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Martha, given the whole fact that a major shift is going on in our country around the whole Me Too movement, I'm sure for employees, there's mm-hmm. a very strong process. What happens with elected officials with that? If someone accuses an elected official? How does that get dealt with? Is that considered part of an ethics
violation? Well, you could. I mean, I think you could make a case that it would be using your office to secure personal benefit or gain or for special privileges or exceptions.
Okay.
I mean, I'm
so
assuming you're talking about
financial, but
sexual
yeah.
harassment
mm-hmm.
or, you know, sexual, yeah, that Yeah, I mean, I could see that. The thing, though, with regular city employees, they're subject, you know, we're subject to all kinds of...
The employees are. The elected officials is where my question is.
And at the end of the day, you know, honestly, even if a violation is found, and even if it's a horrible one, this board, nor the council itself, does not have the authority to remove somebody from office. Only the voters can do that. So it would have to be subject to a recall action, and or unless they quit.
But having the ethics committee consider it and make a statement about it,
sure,
would be an important service to the community.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I think there's, you know, sometimes people think, oh, well, you know, then they can be removed from office, but they can't.
Not in Tacoma.
Yeah, well, not really anywhere, actually.
Well, a recent happening was the economic development director had allegations made against him and was fired from his job, I guess, by the city manager, must be in charge of that. So, but that wouldn't fall necessarily under our purview. That would be another department.
Right. Well, and the way that this is set up is this board has jurisdiction over... it's defined in the code as covered officials, and that is specifically limited to elected officials, appointed members of boards and commissions, so you have jurisdiction over one another, and the utilities director or the city manager. Everybody else is a regular city employee and goes through the HR process, and ultimately, depending if you're a general government employee or a utilities employee, ultimately is disposed of by either the city manager or the utilities director. So it's a relatively small group of people that this board has jurisdiction over in the first place. And that was purposeful. I mean, there's all kinds of issues with, you know, civil service protections and personnel protections and everything else. But specifically adding the utilities director and the city manager to this board was to, you know, create
close the loop.
Yeah, exactly, because they don't want them investigating themselves. And and then the covered officials includes, like I said, members of other boards and commissions. Now, with members of boards and commissions, if there was a violation that was egregious and this board determined that they would recommend a sanction of removing from the board or commission, the city council could do that. We couldn't do it, or you couldn't do it. You could recommend it.
Yeah. It, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's like super fast run through, but basically that's what's in there. So where we talk about, you know, just sort of general morality and sort of, you know, situational ethics, like I think, you know, you all must have encountered in your career. It's not exactly this, although, you know, the conduct... you know, can certainly rise to the level of the type of conduct that's defined in here. But what we don't have the authority over, this group doesn't have the authority over, because it's not in code, is just sort of a, you know, general statement of, you know, that was wrong, that was a bad thing that you did. It would have to be a bad thing actually written in here.
Just going back, so if there's any issue with personnel or city employees, we don't hear any of those cases.
No. So if anything comes in that's directed to the Board of Ethics that is about a city employee, that gets filtered out right away. It doesn't even come to you. Doris would redirect it.
And that goes to the HR department, and there's a lot of procedures with the union and everything.
If it's an ethics allegation, it doesn't go through HR, it goes to the city manager or the utilities director, and they then would assign an investigator to get it worked out. It gets complicated if somebody is a represented employee or a civil servant, that they also have all kinds of protections in the civil service code and in the personnel code, so you might get
of
sort of a parallel track and some overlap, but for exempt employees, it would be investigated and dealt with by the city manager or the utilities director.
That's a good quick run through. I appreciate that, Martha. Any other discussion or questions on that, or any specific questions about the code of ethics? And we, you know, we if we read this and we see anything that we want changed, We are the entity that works with it. If we had a lot of active cases, it would help us be able to work through any issues that happen, and that's what happened in the past. We've just kind of been slow the last year or so.
Well, that's good.
You know, which is a good thing, because everybody's acting appropriately. And
or people have lost faith.
Yeah.
You have to consider both.
I don't want to think that.
So here's what I will tell you in looking at the past cases is that most of them are filed in April. For whatever reason, I went, what is up with April?
Interesting,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I think four or five of them, I think, in the past was started in April. Yeah.
Well, and there was quite a lot of traction for a couple of years that one or two specific people filed them, and they were...
multiple times.
Yeah, and one of them, I want to... Gadfly is not a nice word, but that's, this is where they came from. And neither of those people are around anymore, so the traffic slowed down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they would never make a case. They would just throw like an article.
Right.
A newspaper article. I think this is a violation
and
you're...
And then it implicates resources from staff, from you guys to, get to the bottom of it. So that, the fact that not much is coming in, I think is a really good thing. And I will say that Linda, going to the issue about the Pierce County process, that they've since changed. What they did that the city has never done was the fact that a complaint had been filed couldn't be revealed. The identities of either the filing person or the one who the allegations were against couldn't be revealed. And then the disposition couldn't be revealed. So... the whole thing, never saw the light of day. And
where ours is just the deliberations
are
private.
Right.
Those facts are all
right.
Public.
Yep.
That
and
sounds
I
like
would,
Congress, what,
yeah.
what you just said there.
Yeah.
With their sexual harassment
currently, maybe.
Processes,
yeah,
at least. So. Yeah, there's been
but, and you, in terms of your deliberations, you could do them in open session. There's no prohibition against that, but you have the authority under the Open Meetings Act to do it privately. And you can make whatever decision you want, but I would advise keeping that privilege available because I think it allows you to have a more thoughtful discussion because, just having people staring at you is your, yeah.
And also, too, getting legal advice in that type of setting is really beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And a good thing that we could do in that circumstance is to, come up with some talking points. And we could even have a discussion with each other, after the fact, if we had a case. We had that issue with the past case where people did not understand why we made a decision and we didn't adequately explain it. And that in itself is an issue because we're, a public entity and we're accountable to the public. And we have to work on.
Like any deliberative entity, like a judge, really the outcome of your decision is what you put in your written order. So again, there's some downsides to coming out and saying, well, this is what we're thinking, and this is, the analysis that we went through, because really, at the end of the day, the decision is what it is.
But I think, thinking of that whole case that we had a large group of people who came, and they came, and then they were dismissed, so we get a private discussion, and then at the end, they were just told,
mm-hmm.
we made this decision, and people were like, I don't understand. It wasn't full enough.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have to be all the detail of the discussion,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't full enough to give, I felt, citizens a sense that they had been heard.
Although,
and I think
yeah.
that's the concern I have. That,
but a written order did issue that, I think certainly the complaining person provided a copy of. And I'm sure she distributed it to all of her people. But I get what you're saying, Linda. It feels like a disconnect. But, I think there's some real hazards to, coming out and saying, okay, we've reached a decision. In that case, you said what the decision was. And remember, I think we talked a little bit about it could go either way. You could come out and just say, we've reached a decision and, look for our written order. But you wanted to provide some closure. But... there's a hazard to, just stating an analysis. analysis that isn't yet fully formed. I mean, but like I said, I mean, it's.
I think we could draft sort of an outline for a statement that basically educates about the process a bit, and does without violating some of the private information, because part of the issue of the deliberations is that you may be talking about someone's private information.
And that's a good idea. We could decide to do that, you know, if appropriate on a specific case, or we could, as a group, decide, you know, well, you know, this is a contentious issue, so we should share a little bit more with these folks, possibly. That's something, and we kind of discussed it at that time, and we decided against sharing more information at that point.
But we have people standing outside waiting for information back, and essentially there was this feeling that we couldn't say much to them, and that was uncomfortable for everybody, I think.
Yeah. Can I share the particulars of the case just with our new members? Is that okay?
I mean, just
summarizing it. So basically we had a...
Just going to what we were talking about, I wouldn't get too much into the deliberative process.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so we had a case where there was an allegation against, I think, the mayor for participating in a video that supported the methanol plant. So that was kind of the issue there, and it just did not, there wasn't anything in the code of ethics that talked about it. It could have been a real bad political move, it could have been a lot of things, but it was not an ethics violation.
No evidence that she did, received any benefit from that, or...
Yep. So that's
But high feelings. And,
yes.
And then especially for people who stood around and waited in the evening for a while. I just think now that we've had the experience, we could do a better job of at least educating the public about what we're looking for and what we, you know, that we did not find that here. I think it could have been done, so they didn't feel like they were just held up and smacked. And I think there was some feeling of that sort.
And I've never seen a case like that in the whole time I've been here, and I don't think you ever have since.
I don't think you probably will again
either. But there may be similar things. But that's a good point, and as a group we could decide if we want to share more about our deliberations with any particular, if appropriate. So that's something that we would all discuss and vote on before we did anything.
What do you? I guess I'm not sure what you're saying, Joe. Would you?
Well, I mean, what Linda was saying. If we wanted to, in a written order, share a little bit more with somebody.
Well, a written order basically does summarize your deliberations. It says, you know, here's the facts that we found based on this evidence. Here's the conclusions we reached, and here's the outcome. I mean, that is the summary of your deliberation.
Later, I think in the verbal response, if we have people here. In the verbal response, we can speak to that, to say we took time, we looked at these issues,
and this is your decision.
Yeah. Although in that case, I think what you did say was, you know, we've considered the facts, and you know, the evidence presented, you know, doesn't rise to the level of a violation, and that is the answer.
Yes.
And I don't know really what more you could have said, but I mean I get that those people went away feeling.
I think we could have done a better job. It was just a hot topic.
Yeah.
But I think we could have done a better
job. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's case by case. It really is.
Well, I think the point is, for us, then, before we finish our deliberation, if we have people here to hear our outcome, we should discuss how we're going to present it to them.
That's
true. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fair.
Okay, so is there any other discussion? Did we want to consider, you know, because here's another thing, too, from what I've been told, you know, if we meet and discuss a meeting topic or some kind of agenda item with just her and I or one other person, we're able to do that without a public meeting, right?
Yeah. Two of you can.
So if we're having more, if we're having a meeting all together, then we have to do a public meeting about that.
Well, I guess it depends on what you're doing. If you're even gathering to, Because there's only five of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Two.
Yep.
Two's all you get.
So on your suggestion, you know, we could form a subcommittee to discuss better practices, or, you know, research what other entities, Pierce County, Seattle, or whatever, are doing, and bring ideas forward. You know, maybe we could consider doing that in our next meeting. Maybe you and I could meet up and discuss that and see if we want to bring any other information to the other members.
There was a lot of information in that Yale thing. It could be the kind of thing we could each take a section of and look at to see whether there are merits or whatever, to points we may find not. We may find we're well ahead of the game, or we may find some things we can discuss. But as I recall, it was about 90 pages, so I think we might want to share out. So, that was their recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So,
does someone want to send that around, that Yale study around?
Yeah.
That would be a good start if people are interested in researching that.
Did we scan it in?
No, I printed it out until I ran out of paper.
Oh.
But at all.
Well, they have a website, but they have a lot of publications on that particular website,
do.
And I don't know if there's anything specific.
And
that
I think I just Googled best practices on city ethics, and found that. And there were several other things, and you know, there are conferences and some other things. And it seems to me that there was sort of a flowering for a while, and then there's been less, though I would guess we'll see another flowering of ethics concerns over the next year or two about government. So,
okay. Is there any other agenda items or topics any of the other members want to bring up? All right. The time is 7:30, and we are adjourned.